Hi, and welcome back to the show. Today, I am joined by Jaime Nakach. He is the CEO and founder of Virtual Latinos. We had Jaime on the show about 12 months ago, so you can go back and listen to that initial episode. He talks more, of course, about Virtual Latinos, setting up the company, things like that. Today, we're getting updates, really interesting updates on his business, of course, but more focusing on the Latin region. He's focusing on different countries now. He is spreading between Venezuela and Colombia and moving a little bit away from Mexico. So it's interesting to see how those markets are developing. We talk a lot about the availability of English-speaking agents and people within those regions and a lot of extra stuff about outsourcing, offshoring, nearshoring, and also business in general. So it's a great episode with Jaime. As always, if you want any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. Enjoy. This podcast is brought to you by Outsource Accelerator. We are the world's leading outsourcing marketplace and advisory. We help big and small businesses with their outsourcing needs, and we can help you too. We cover everything from offshore business and staffing strategy, optimal outsourcing structures, implementations, and fully managed services. If you are already outsourcing, about to start, or are somewhere in between, then we can ensure that you get the best from outsourcing. That's the best prices, best terms, and of course, the best results from your offshore operations. The Outsource Accelerator Marketplace now covers over 3,000 outsourcing firms, representing a global workforce of over 5 million people. We also host this leading outsourcing podcast, publish Inside Outsourcing, and have over 15,000 pages of content on the site. Because we span the entire market, we can ensure that you get the best deal possible. Get in touch today. Visit us at outsourceaccelerator.com/quote. Also, if you find this podcast interesting or valuable, please share it. We have now produced hundreds of episodes featuring the outsourcing world's most prominent luminaries. Please show your support by sharing this podcast today. Jaime, it's been about 12 months since we last spoke to you. You are the CEO and founder of Virtual Latinos, so that makes you our official correspondent for the Latino region of outsourcing. For those that didn't listen to the initial podcast, do you want to just give a quick overview of what you do at Virtual Latinos, and then we can go into how you've gone over the last 12 months?
Definitely, sure. So I'll tell you in a slightly different way, but our goal and part of what we do is to empower both Latinos and people that are our customers, that in this case are mostly North America. So we help improve their lives. In the case of improving the virtual assistants and professionals from Latin America, we obviously help them get great jobs with our clients who are in the United States for the most part. So both sides are winning. Clients are growing their businesses, and the virtual professionals in Latin America are improving their lives.
Great. And how's the last 12 months been going?
The last 12 months have been, generally speaking, good. We definitely continue to grow positively, which has been really great and exciting for us. Things have definitely been shifting and changing, and we're obviously looking at the market overall to make sure that we adapt as things change. I am happy to report that at least in the last 3 years, our growth was pretty big, and we were able to make it into the Inc. 5000 list, which lists the top 5000 private American companies. And we got listed as number 80 with growth close to 6,000%, which is pretty huge, which of course is very hard to keep up.
Yeah, that's incredible. Incredible growth, and congratulations. And I understand you've almost doubled in the last year, which is really, really impressive from obviously a far higher number of people. So congratulations.
And thank you so much.
Just give us an overview of what do you focus on? Obviously, Latinos in the name, virtuals in the name. Do you provide office or is it all remote? And what kind of roles and functions do you cover?
Sure. Yeah. So we 100% work with everybody remotely. Everybody works usually from their home unless they have some other space. And we do have part of our team here in the United States, but everybody who works for our clients and most of our internal team is in Latin America. We don't provide any specific equipment to them. They got to have their own computers and internet to begin with, but we definitely provide a lot of other resources, which we can talk about. In terms of what we focus for roles, generally speaking, they're in the categories of general admin work, marketing, sales, support, and finance or other related things. And of course, within each of those categories, there's a lot of different roles. We kind of identified right now around 36 roles with some sub-roles that we mostly focus on. But generally speaking, I say that we offer virtual professionals that do a lot of that work when it comes to helping businesses, except things related to web development or software development, which are usually technology roles.
Got it. And do you typically dive in and get directly involved in deliverables in the day-to-day work of people, or are you more sort of staffing where you obviously provide the staff and the HR environment and things like that and let the client manage their own staff? How do you manage that?
Yeah, so we definitely do that second part in terms of we don't get involved in the day-to-day on the operations. We do have a team of customer success that is definitely always there to help our clients and our virtual professionals in terms of whatever they need for the relationship, that we manage mostly like a human resources department that works with our clients. But no, we don't get into the details of what it is that each professional is doing with our client. And that's both private between them. And we don't manage that, but we manage everything else.
And what countries do you typically hire from now?
Right now, the top country became Colombia. So that's different from 12 months ago. Mexico was our number one. Colombia was second. Now Colombia's first and Mexico second, and at least for now, third place in terms of the number of people that we hire from each country is Honduras. So between those three countries, wow, that represent our top three, but Venezuela is not far behind. And the talent in Venezuela is amazing. I mean, in all of these countries, but Venezuela has really been growing a lot too.
That's great, actually, because Venezuela is really going through incredibly tough times, isn't it? And you just feel so sorry for the people when the governments and bureaucracy really screw things up, you know? Like, the people are just these victims of circumstance, and it's amazing that if they can kind of access economic opportunity, especially when their currency is just absolutely collapsing, if they can derive income from the global economy instead of their domestic economy, it's such a powerful opportunity.
For sure. And you touch on a very important subject because, of course, in Latin America, every country's economies are different. But Venezuela and Argentina, in terms of what their money represents in terms of US dollars or what the value that is of course, on the floor, very, very low, which is exactly why, because we don't pay people less, let's say, because they're in a more poor country, we pay people equally based on their skills and their experience. So somebody in Venezuela, even if they are getting paid, let's say, the same as somebody in Mexico or Colombia, for them, it makes a much bigger difference because those dollars basically last a lot longer and make a much bigger impact in their life.
And of all of your staff, then, you're primarily catering to the US. What proportion of the services of any of the interactions are done in Spanish, or is it still the majority English?
Yeah, so we make it a requirement that everybody who wants to work through Virtual Latinos has to speak English. Something we actually changed is now the minimum level, use the European standard, measured in letters, where C2 is the highest, C1 is the next below that, and then B2 is the one below that. And before, we were accepting B2 level English, now we're accepting only C1. So yeah, everybody speaks English, or pretty good business. About 5% or less. Actually, less than 5% of our clients are coming to us because they want their people to speak Spanish. And in this case, always would say it's a second language, even if obviously it's their first language, right? Spanish or Portuguese. But yeah, we are focusing on getting the talent that's English speaking in Latin America.
Yeah, that's really interesting because a lot of the outsourcing firms across Asia, across the world, are all now heading to Latin America because of the demand for Spanish speaking within the US. And, you know, certainly that's a story and that's a justification because, of course, there is now sort of a large Hispanic population in the US and a demand for it. But it's interesting that you, being based and being native to there, only 5% of your demand is in Spanish and you're mainly catering to the US. So it's interesting to get the different perspectives on things. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we know that if we wanted to grow in terms of volume, we could definitely accept people who don't speak English, but only speak Spanish, and we probably could cater to that. I mean, the demand is for sure there. I don't think that it isn't, but I think that the price point that those companies are looking to pay is probably going to be lower than the one that they're willing to pay for people who speak English, right? Naturally. I mean, I myself, growing up in Mexico, I remember my parents at around 6 or 7 years old, you know, taking me to English classes, and I was like, why am I going to speak English? I live in Mexico. There's no reason for me to learn English, right? And of course, my parents, and like many parents, tell you, their kids, you know, if you speak English, you'll have better opportunities in life. And yeah, that's what we're focusing on in terms of those people who have, in a way, that blessing, which is kind of unfortunate. I wish worse people spoke English in Latin America, because it would definitely open up their doors a lot more. And that's kind of our biggest challenge right now. We only accept about 5% of people who apply to work with our company, and the rest of the 95% who don't get in, the majority of them is because their English level, if they have it, is very low.
Right. Yeah. And what is the penetration of really good, you know, and it's important to listen to your parents, isn't it? Like, what is the penetration of really good English? Because I speak to outsourcing firms across the world, whether it's like Sri Lanka or Fiji or Latin America or whatever, and everyone says English is amazing. And it's kind of, it is when you don't know the context of other places, you know? I find it amazing that anyone speaks a second language, because I'm very poor with languages. So, you know, I'm always amazed when people can speak, but certainly a lot of these, you know, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, they're all Ethiopia, you know, they're all sort of chatting and saying English is amazing, but there's actually big variance. And when you go into those countries, the average person does not speak English, the taxi driver, the shop clerk. Yeah. Whereas the Philippines, for example, all of the street signs are in English. The taxi drivers speak English. Most of the newspapers are in English, which, of course, is a different level altogether. But with Latin America, and of course, there's many different countries in there, but is it 5% of the employee pool would speak really good English?
We recently were doing some research in terms of specifically in Mexico about what percentage of people speak English as a country as a whole. And, you know, it was definitely less than 20%. It was closer to 12%, which I found, you know, pretty shocking, right? It's a big country. There's a lot of people. And then when you start digging into the specifics of the cities, so that's when you get to obviously see where that's the concentration of where people speak English. But yeah, like for the most part, people just don't speak English. And I've had the blessing that I've been to Southeast Asia. I traveled actually almost every country in Southeast Asia except the Philippines. For a weird reason, I haven't been there yet. But yeah, I was quite amazed of how many people, you know, as an average, do speak English. In fact, when I started the company, I was thinking to myself, because I wasn't trying to build that business. That was actually the result of something I was trying to do for my marketing agency. And I was thinking to myself, maybe it's a bad idea to start this business. And maybe that's the reason people didn't start it before me, because there's just not as many people in terms of percentage that speak English. But of course, that's changing. More and more people are learning English. And that's going to change for sure for the next couple of decades. But yeah, today, that's a big catch-up that Latin America has to do against the Philippines and other countries where English is a lot more spoken.
Yeah, and it sounds very imperialist of me to sort of celebrate Englishness. And there's a lot of pros and cons with it, isn't there? I mean, as people adopt English, then you lose a lot of your own identity and culture. And I think the Philippines has been kind of victim of that because of the certain the history that it's had with the colonizations and things like that. Like, it hasn't been a great history, but it certainly puts them in good stead now for an economic opportunity if the country is largely English speaking. But then there's context, because Filipino language or Tagalog, it's relatively a small isolated language, whereas Spanish is obviously, I think there's more people speaking Spanish in the world than English. Yeah. Like, it's a hugely dominant language, and it's got culture, and so there is no need to speak a second language. So it's difficult, isn't it? But there's opportunity if you do.
For sure. You know, I think that a lot of the Latinos in the United States, especially let's call them artists or people that are in music and in movies, that are changing also how people see not only Latinos in the world in general, but how people think about Spanish and the importance of Spanish in the world. You know, obviously, there's a lot of different populations in the world, and I think Chinese is the number one language in terms of people who speak one single language, right? Even bigger than English. But yeah, I mean, English in certain countries is growing because people obviously see the big benefit of it. Of course, Mexico because of the proximity to the US. But Colombia has been a big place of where I'm just continuing to be impressed of how many people do speak English. And they're not only do they speak it very well. You know, sometimes I hear people that are interviewing speaking in English and they speak better than me. And I've been here for many years, right? So yeah, it's just, it's amazing. But when you don't have the opportunity for your parents to go and get you private English classes, you know, it's harder to learn English. But you know, today we have the internet, and the internet has so many opportunities. Yeah. Literally, people can just download an app and ideally not pay, right? So it's free, but pay fairly little and start practicing English. And I mean, I've been speaking to people that are literally just doing that, at least that's better than nothing and something that you couldn't do before, even a generation ago.
Yeah, I mean, the opportunities are huge, but like I'm married to a Brazilian and, you know, she came to the Philippines with sort of somewhat limited English, but now it's her English is absolutely incredible and am trying to learn a bit of Portuguese and I've been on Duolingo and I have done about 1,400 days consecutive without a day off. Wow. Which I'm proud of. But, you know, there is no way I could really hold a sensible conversation and certainly not a technical conversation that you need if you're doing business or you're in a boardroom talking. So I certainly have empathy for people that can not only speak a language, but kind of engage on a very technical level, representing their profession or their job and talking to their bosses. It's another level completely, isn't it?
I agree. I am very impressed as well, for sure. Yeah, especially those that are like not like me that have been in the US for a while, but they're still in Latin America, but somehow they're like as if they were here, right? And that's kind of the negative in countries like Chile or Argentina, where it's just English is just not a thing in terms of what people know that it's something that they should really get into, let's call it, compared to other countries. And, you know, we've been speaking to some companies there that we're trying to engage with for some stuff. And like, yeah, even if you have a company and a successful company, you know, some people just don't speak English. And I get it. They don't need it for the local economy, but I think it's amazing that some people don't even think about making that a priority for the global world we live in.
And how often, because in the Philippines, you know, like we do, you know, we're involved with a lot of recruitment and you see a lot of roles. And as soon as you put filters in the recruitment in terms of they need to be in a certain location, they need certain experience, they need certain languages, then it really narrows down the pool of candidates. Do you find having English as, or very good English as an absolute requisite that, you know, you're maybe not getting the best web developer or accountant or designer? Actually, there's the entire pool has a ton of amazing designers, but because you've got to get the one that also speaks English as a core skill, then you're sort of compromising the candidate pool a little bit.
We 100% are. You are completely right. It is something we're very aware of. And we've made a few exceptions for some clients that are definitely, well, let's say, looking for a graphic designer. We obviously know that they don't have to have the best English. But because of our process and because many of the people we hire, let's say, don't always just have a single role, like let's say a graphic designer, we're just doing design all day, but they do other stuff. Generally speaking, we want them to speak English so that, you know, our biggest and most important thing that we want is quality, right? We want quality of the relationship, quality of the candidates, and also now quality of the client, right? We want to build strong and long-term relationships between our clients and our professionals. And that's what we're striving for now, right? We could focus, let's say, just on volume or just on the lowest levels of English just to, let's say, make more sales or make, you know, that growth even bigger. But no, that's not where we're focusing on because we see the impact when the relationships are strong, when candidates are able to communicate better with the clients and vice versa. Things last longer, things are just usually more successful.
Yeah, and do you find certain roles are better at English? Tend to find, you know, in the Philippines, you get a lot of accountants and the developers, but they're more introverted people often. And these are generalizations, of course. And accountants are more introverted. And so they often have weaker English as well because they're not the kind of people to, I don't know, develop their language skills, even though their English is great, but they're just not good communicators. Do you find that in in your regions as well, that the kind of introverted roles will often struggle to be good communicators in English as well.
Yeah, 100%. But that's, I think, because, yeah, literally you got to practice, right? And so usually the best people that we have are the ones in sales. Naturally, they got to be talking on the phone. Yeah. And they got to just practice a lot. So,
and the creative roles, the designers and marketers and stuff like that.
Yeah, much less. Those much less, even though they still do, right? But, and of course, the technology people now, we're definitely not offering, like I mentioned, technology-based roles for our clients. We're definitely doing it for us internally, the roles we need to fill. And yeah, like, let's say our tech team English level as an average is a lot lower than others, for sure, especially when it comes to verbally speaking in English.
Yeah. And so you've moved the majority, well, you're leaning more on Colombia now. So why the shift? Is it just once you find a good sort of pool of candidates, it's easier to find others? You're getting comfortable there? Like, why is kind of settling on Colombia?
We're not really settling on Colombia. The truth is we accept and promote and attract people from everywhere. The reason that Colombia's just grown bigger is because we just simply hired more people from there, but no. We don't necessarily specifically try to target, let's say, more Colombians. We've done it a couple of times where we're like, you know, if we want to go for a specific role, well, we know Colombia will have good candidates, right? It becomes part of our reality and in the back of our mind that if we're going to look for a specific country, we could focus on Colombia. But the way that we do our recruitment is not the way that most recruitment companies do it. And so our way of attracting people is not country specific. In fact, when companies come to us, and they're like, oh, you know, I have to hire somebody from Costa Rica or something like that. We're like, listen, that's awesome, but we may not be able to help you because we can't make that a requirement. We hire the best talent from wherever it is.
Right, right. Fascinating, huh?
Yeah. But I mean, Colombia just continues to be a place where I'm also part of entrepreneur groups, and there's also separately digital nomads, and there's a lot of activity happening in Colombia. And which is also why I see also a lot of competitors now focusing in Colombia. Some competitors do specifically just use within Latin America a couple of countries, and Colombia is one of them. And it's also been a big industry for call centers and BPOs for a while. So there's definitely a lot of talent there.
It's huge. It's an amazing country. I was there for a few weeks, and it's an amazing country. And it does have a very developed call center industry, doesn't it? Like going back kind of 20, 30 years kind of thing, which maybe also helps with the whole English speaking thing. But
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, and now even as somebody in the US, now when I'm going and calling some companies for support, at least, you know, me personally, I can usually tell from an accent whether they're going to be Filipinos or in India or in Latin America. And more people being hired by big companies in the US are now in Latin America. Right. And then I ask, are you in Latin America? They usually say yes. And then I start speaking Spanish. And of course, I, as a Mexican, just feel more comfortable speaking with them in Spanish, even though my English is, I think, good as well. But then, you know, some companies don't let them actually speaking in Spanish because they're recording the calls and they're like, you know, we, the company, want to know what you guys are talking about.
Yeah. A lot of the call centers, they actually have signs up on the wall saying English only, even in the tea rooms, even off shift. And the argument is that it just sort of, I don't know, I mean, gives them practice, I suppose, but also just, I don't know, you know. And again, that is a little bit sort of questionable if you're not allowed to kind of chat on your lunch break in your own language.
Who knows?
You say over the last year, like, competition's increased. Like, I noticed that as a lot. It now seems like the cat's out of the bag. Like, everyone is kind of talking about offshore staff, offshoring. Have we finally arrived? Like, in some respects, I'm really excited because it seems like we've been banging this drum for years, if not decades, trying to tell businesses about this opportunity. And now it comes along. But when it does, you also get an increase in competition, don't you? So it's harder to stand out. It's harder to be noticed. How are you seeing things?
For sure. In our specific space, which is the one we're tracking the most, we do have a whole big list of competitors. Many of them are probably, of course, on your site. But even within Latin America, we've seen a lot of companies focusing exclusively in offering virtual professionals and assistants in Latin America. And so, yeah, definitely something that, of course, when I started this in 2018, it didn't exist, which is why I built it. But usually when you're trying to build a new business and you know there's a lot of competition, you usually don't want to go in there, right? That's a general rule. But yeah, companies are seeing, of course, that there's a lot of opportunity. So yes, there's now more competition, but And, you know, now I've also met many of our competitors in person, different trade shows. And in the end, we know that the pie's just going to get bigger and bigger. So at least for now, even if more competitors come in, the market is so big and we're still in the infancy, as you mentioned in your book, in this outsourcing journey in terms of people around the world understanding the amazing opportunity of just picking talent from around the world, wherever the best talent is, to be able to make a difference. And so, yeah, I think that if we, you know, I've been actually trying to find statistically how many people are actually hiring remote workers versus, let's say, a call center, right? Because that's managed through a company, just to get an idea of how popular it is now versus how much you can get, right? If I were to ask you, Derek, what is the percentage of people, let's say, in the United States that are working with people remotely? I don't know the exact percentage, but it's probably going to be very low compared to what it'll be for sure in a decade or two.
Yeah, super, super. I think penetration is still so, so low. Like, there's about 40 million small and medium-sized businesses in the US and across the English-speaking world. And, you know, I reckon, you know, there's maybe 4 million employed by that sector, like offshore.
Yeah.
So it's just a tiny fraction. It's a tiny, tiny fraction. And I think it can, you know, I think there will become a day, whether it's kind of 20, 30 years, but everyone or 80% will employ at least one person offshore. Yeah. Because, you know, like, you imagine when your kids grow up, you know, like, and the Gen Zs, they're all growing up online now. They're all growing up in chat forums. They're texting, tweeting, they're Slacking. And as they become employers and hiring managers, they're all just naturally going to go, like, why are we hiring in our local vicinity? I'm just going to hire the best people available to me at a good cost, you know, and it's all going to go, it's going to be online, isn't it? It's crazy.
For sure. And there's definitely that big opportunity, but just why, even though we have so many competitors, we haven't actually, let's say, lost too many clients due to a competitor, because like, there's just so many people out there. Everybody's, let's say, attracting slightly different people. And so everybody's hopefully getting business, which is of course a good thing. But yeah, as the market eventually will continue to get more and more, in this case, both competitors and demand, only hopefully the best will be around. Even in the last, I think it was already, yeah, in the last 12 months, we had a company from somebody that was in the United States, but they were also Latino. They copied our entire website. In this case, of course, like, they were very bad or not very smart, like literally copying our entire site, the entire design, the entire everything. Like, they probably looked up the template and copied the whole thing. They just changed some colors. They even forgot to change the wording where we could still find the words virtual Latinos in their text. And of course, we took it up with the lawyers and we had to tell them, listen, this is very bad. We welcome competition, but this is obviously ridiculous. And of course, they had to just change it, and they did. But, you know, some people just think it's easy. Oh, great. I can just hire a bunch of people and put up a website in a couple of weeks and, you know, have a business. That's not how it works, right? At least not for the long term.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. For sure. It's scary, the competition, isn't it? And also, it becomes harder to differentiate, doesn't it? So how are you?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I know you put a lot of thought into your business and the structuring and like what you represent. So how are you kind of differentiating yourself as a service and your company, but also the staff that represent you?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I'll start by saying that we today and for the future, hopefully the very long future, we will continue to have humans be the center of our universe within what we're doing. So yes, we have a business and we all need to make money, and we are using a lot of tools and automations and systems and processes and technology, but at the very heart of what we're doing, we're connecting humans to other humans. And it is that's the most important part of our relationship with each other. And so we're definitely focusing on finding the right quality of candidates. So that's, for me, the most important differentiator. And of course, as companies continue to evolve, everybody wants to send the best candidates to their clients, for sure. But we take pride in the fact that our process is very thorough for both clients and VAs to go through our process. In fact, this is why we lose a few clients, because we take too long. We make it very specific and sometimes, hopefully not boring, but it's a lot of work. But we're very proud that the work leads to quality, and the quality usually leads to the result of a relationship. So that's number one in terms of how we're trying to differentiate ourselves. Of course, Latin America on its own now is not a differentiator because other people are offering that, but that's still the core of what we do. It's part of our name, and we're going to be continuing to be what, you know, we want to focus on in terms of bringing the best talent from Latin America to the world. In this case, of course, mostly right now to the U.S. and North America, but we actually have a few people that are Latinos working in Europe or in other places and serving our clients with this time zone. You know, of course, just a handful, but, you know, ideally, we're going to focus on just promoting Latinos to the world, whether they're in Latin America, working for companies in Latin America or other places. And then the last thing, which I mentioned on my last podcast, for me personally, I'm a big believer and user of automation. And so since I started my business, I focused on how to use technology in combination with outsourcing to have a competitive edge in terms of how we service our clients, both externally and internally in terms of our team. And so, yeah, investing in technology and automation is a big part of how we believe we'll be able to continue to stack out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like, what is your take on technology, and how does it become a tool versus it starts to impinge on actually getting people to do work? And a lot of people are scared of technology and whether it's going to wipe out jobs. So, but you're running towards it and embracing it. Like, I suppose question one is, how exactly are you embracing it? It's sort of easy to say, you know, I'm embracing it, but how are you kind of implementing it into your?
Yeah. So technology itself is obviously changing all the time. As you know, artificial intelligence or AI is a big hot topic today. And the first thing that we're doing is actually, in terms of that, is teaching our internal team, which right now is over 100 people, know how to use the tool and actually use it on their day-to-day, because we know that, like any tool that humankind has gone through, like you've also, you know, explained in your book, the tools basically make you more efficient and better at what you're doing with your time. And I think that in this case, AI is just another tool today that, if used by humans correctly, will make their outcome simply better or, you know, bigger outcome. So right now we literally have everybody in our team, whether it's admin or marketers or tech or recruitment, everybody's using the tool in one way or another. You know, some of them for simple tasks and some of them for more complex tasks. So getting everybody on board to that, not only to use it, but also trying to penetrate really their minds or their inner self in terms of, like, listen, if you guys don't join and don't embrace AI, you're just going to be left behind, right? It's as if people, you know, in the 90s were starting to use the internet and people just, let's say, refused to use it. Eventually today, if somebody just doesn't use the internet, they can barely even do things these days in many of the businesses that we interact with in the US. So I think AI is going to have to be some tool that people have to embrace if they want to stay relevant.
Yeah, it's inevitable, isn't it? You know, it's what I find interesting is, you know, you as the business and you certainly as the entrepreneur, you're all keen to embrace it, and maybe you're an early adopter and maybe you're able to learn these tools, but how do you kind of cascade them down to, you know, your soon to be thousands of staff and, you know, get them to adopt cutting edge tools and best practices? It's really difficult, isn't it? And to get the entire workforce to adopt these things it's going to be slower, isn't it?
For sure. It's hard. I mean, we launched something this year, which I'll also share with you, that's new that we didn't have last year or last time we spoke. So we launched the Virtual Latinos Academy. It's a learning platform that is only available to the people in our community who've been pre-vetted by us. All right, that opened up. It's not open to the public, so that everybody that is part of our community that we've pre-vetted has the ability to come now and actually take courses that we're investing in creating ourselves by creating these courses that we believe, of course, are going to be valuable to them, whether they're already working with our clients or they're looking to, you know, a job within our company to get more skills so that they can be more useful, of course, ideally to our clients if they stay around and find a job with us. But in the end, we're going to be helping them, in this case, for free, because we're not charging anybody for the access to the academy, for them to upskill themselves. And, you know, we believe that focusing on our community's skills and helping them grow that is going to be a big part of our future success. Because now the biggest thing, like I told you, is English, right? And that's another thing we're going to try to tackle. How can we do something to help people get their English better so they can get a job with us? That's our biggest real pain point in a way. But all those other skills that more and more companies are now looking for, and eventually we'll just expect to be a basic default to have, We're trying to be, you know, forward thinking through that.
Yeah, that's exciting. You know, it's exciting when you're suddenly trying to develop the talent pool. You know, you're starting to look pretty big, aren't you? You know, you're starting to think pretty broad when you're kind of saying, how can we influence the kind of education and English speaking and all of that of our candidate pool? That's pretty exciting stuff. And of course, you know, that's how capitalism improves environments and economies and communities. It's because it's sort of everyone's trying to better themselves. So well done.
Sure.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, look, we're really trying to improve everybody's life. And, you know, ideally the ones who are going to go through the academy will be hired by us and they'll be part of our community for a long time. But, you know, some won't, and that's okay. You know, as long as we're helping them with their journey in life to just be better and have a better life and improving their life, we would be happy. I think that when you make a difference in the world, and then if as a second thing you're also able to make money, that's great. And the impact that we've been seeing for the last 5-6 years that we've been around, and the stories that we hear from the people that are part of our community, how their, you know, the job and being part of the community has helped them grow is amazing. So we have more than just a job for them. We actually have an internal community that's private where people talk to each other, they share things, and they actually support each other. Let's call it as group therapy. People are really helping each other out, and that's awesome to see because that's not so common in the workplace, right? People are all kind of competing with each other and cutthroating to be able to get the job. And yes, even though, of course, our company is also competitive to get the jobs, generally speaking, I love seeing how people are friendly and helpful with each other. It's really nice to see.
Yeah, no, that's powerful stuff. What a beautiful place to leave it. Jaime, thank you so much. Incredible stuff. And of course, I encourage people to reach out to have a conversation to see how offshoring, nearshoring, virtual staff can transform their business. So how can they get in touch and learn more?
Yeah, for sure. So I invite everybody to check us out online, our website, firstvirtuallatinos.com, as well as our social handles and pretty much all social media. It's at Virtual Latinos, one word. And of course, if you want to reach out to me on LinkedIn, please feel free to do so. I love talking to entrepreneurs and people overall because everybody has a different point of view in this world. And I really enjoy just talking to people. And of course, if I can be helpful, even better.
That was Jaime Nakach. If anyone wants any of the show notes, go to outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast. And if you want to ask us anything, then drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.